Recently published federal numbers show there were approximately 475,000 police-reported crashes in 2016 that involve large trucks. This means the odds are good that either a truck in your fleet or one you're driving can wind up in a crash sooner or later. But how you deal with a crash immediately afterward can make a big difference between winning a lawsuit filed against you or your fleet and losing one. This is Eyes on the Road, presented by PrePass, the provider of Waystation bypass and toll payment services. PrePass also provides informed visualization software for improving safety scores and lowering toll-related costs. I'm Evan Lockridge, and thanks for tuning in. Truck crashes can happen anytime and anywhere, involving the newest of truck drivers or the most experienced veteran. And many times, they're not the truck driver's fault. According to Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration figures released this past spring, in 2016 there were a little more than 100,000 truck crashes that resulted in nearly 150,000 injuries. What's so disturbing is both figures are around 20% higher than a year earlier. Whether or not you are a driver and your fleet is at fault, a crash of any sort has the potential to prompt a lawsuit from those that were hurt against the driver and the trucking company. That's why knowing what to do following a crash is so important. Joining me to discuss this is trucking defense attorney Doug Marcello of the law firm Marcello & Cavisto, based in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. His firm works with fleets when it comes to accident response and to defend trucking companies and their drivers when lawsuits are filed against them. Plus, he's a commercial driver's license holder. Doug, it's good to have you here, and how are you?
Evan, doing great. Thank you very much for having me.
Before we start, let me get to this one piece of business and say the following podcast discusses legal issues and contains legal information is not intended to provide legal advice or counsel. Contact your attorney for any legal questions or information for your particular situation and company. With that said, Doug, first question for you. What are the things that should always be done by drivers and fleets at the scene of a crash, and why?
The biggest thing, Evan, is to be prepared for the accident and to act immediately. Number one, have a plan in which to walk the driver through from the dispatcher, whoever takes the call, what they should do at the scene. There's a number of accident response forms that we have. They're in Word documents that we're glad to send out to folks. And at the end, you can give my email address. They're free documents and they can change them. These include photographs at the scene, what the dispatcher should do to talk them through. You know, the driver has been through the most traumatic experience of their professional career. They need somebody, I refer to it as mission control, to help them deal with that in a thorough, sequential basis. The company needs to evaluate what is the significance of the injuries, damages in this accident, and respond in the fullest manner necessary, be it an independent adjuster, accident reconstructionist, or other experts that are needed on the scene.
What are some other common mistakes made by fleets or drivers immediately following a crash?
The big thing, Evan, is the driver, the first one on the scene, has to kick into gear. And what I've seen too many times is drivers fail to take that action that they need to defend not only their company, but themselves. Start with taking photographs. And in today's world, we live in a YouTube society. Well, just taking photographs of the damage, the physical evidence, other information at the scene is invaluable to give us a foundation to defend that case. The other thing is identifying witnesses. You know, in a case in which we don't have in-cab video, an independent witness is crucial to a defense. It's somebody who doesn't have a dog in that fight. And so when they come into court, the jury can look at them and say, you know, this person is objective, nothing to gain. In fact, they're probably losing time and money from work to come in here. And if those folks can help us provide that information, that's what we need to get.
Recently, I was reading about a truck-involved crash that was not that severe for the truck or the driver, but was for the other vehicles involved, as well as the passengers. The truck driver didn't stop until miles later on when he was pulled over by police. What kind of repercussions does something like this have for the driver or the fleet?
We start off in a situation like that, there is the potential for criminal charges against the driver leading to the scene of an accident, which in any state is a severe traffic criminal penalty on against their license. The other thing is the perception is that the driver either failed to render aid at the scene or proceeded on when they knew that they should have stopped and been involved in an accident. Now, one of the flip sides of this is in terms of the operation of the commercial motor vehicle, a large truck like that, he or she might not know of the contact involved. I had a case like that a few years ago in New Jersey, claimed that we had sideswiped somebody going through a traffic circle. And it was a case that we won both on the criminal side and at trial.
Now, Doug, I think you would agree that truck drivers are often known for the good deeds they perform at roadside, from helping someone whose vehicle is broken down to even delivering babies along the side of an interstate. What advice do you have for fleets and drivers when it comes to rendering aid at the site of a crash they or one of their rigs were involved in?
Evan, the drivers in a situation where it's absolutely necessary need to be prepared to respond, to provide whatever assistance they need. But one of the key things is this, is to assess the absolute necessity of it. Because what we don't want to do is render aid and, in effect, worsen the situation by our good efforts and good intentions. So what they need to do is, if it's absolutely necessary, life-threatening, something they can address right away, and it's crucial, time-sensitive, do what they need to do. Do the right thing. Conversely, if it's not that crucial, let's leave it to the trained medical professionals, the EMTs and those other folks who help us and help our driving public every day.
You mentioned about a truck driver rendering aid and possibly making things worse at a crash scene. Are there legal repercussions if something like that happens?
Potentially, Evan, that's correct. There are Good Samaritan statutes, law which try to protect those who do what they think should be done, but there are a number of qualifications to them. The bottom line is to, absent crucial, life-threatening, or immediate necessity, to let it go to those who are trained to do that.
I want to head off in another direction here. Following a truck-involved crash, how important is it that the truck owner get a copy of the police report about the incident? And two, and this raises another question, should truckers always make sure police respond to the scene of any crash they are involved in, even if it's extremely minor?
The police report, Evan, is a crucial part of the investigation. It gives us the perspective of the police, includes the witnesses, and many times includes the basis for what they see or what they saw at the scene. So getting it, very important. With regard to getting the police to the scene, you know, in today's world, particularly for truck drivers, I understand the press of time, the delivery, you're working under 14 hours, 11 hours, down through that. But when at all possible, and in virtually every situation, to notify or contact the police with regard to that accident. The other thing, one of the forms I talked about we provide to companies is a sign-off form for the other individual to say that they acknowledge that they've been in an accident, but verify that there are no injuries from that accident. Now, that doesn't stop somebody from coming back a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 years later, saying I was injured, but you've given them a hurdle they have to overcome at that time. Usually when I see a four-wheel driver situation that they don't want to stick around for the police, there's usually a reason, and it doesn't pass the smell test.
And I imagine once a police report has been obtained, it's important that the fleet and driver make sure it accurately reflects what happened at the crash scene.
Police have a very difficult job. They come onto a scene after the fact. They must deal with a lot of accidents throughout time and through the week and then compile that information later on. So despite their best efforts and the quality work that they do, the excellent work they do, it's necessary to make sure that we look at it, the company looks at it, the driver looks at it. Are there any mistakes in there? Are there any misinformation? So we can try to get those corrected, if possible, by a supplemental report, but at least we're able to document the information, get the evidence, so that we can address that at a later time.
Let's talk about technology and how it plays into all this, because as you know, trucking has changed a lot in the past 10 years and even more in the past 20. Nowadays, there are an array of safety systems that are on trucks, from collision mitigation systems to video systems that record what's going on in and around the truck while it's going down the road. Doug, in your opinion, are these new technologies helpful or harmful to truck fleets and drivers if they are involved in a crash?
I start with the thought, Evan, that anything we can do to make our highways and industry safer is a good thing. And these technologies have helped to do so. And we've seen them over the years since I've been in this, from the collision avoidance system to the side view radars to the anti-rollover video development. And I believe, as a general fact, they all make our industry safer and generally helped protect the trucking company, particularly in terms of litigation. You know, about 5-10 years ago, when video cameras were first introduced, I was a little hesitant on it. I'm thinking, geez, you know, the last thing we need is another piece of evidence out there that I'm going to have to deal with. But my thought, Evan, on this is, here's the deal. The trucking companies and the trucks themselves get blamed for everything, and most of the time unfairly. If we have objective visual evidence, and as I said a little bit ago, we live in a YouTube society, that visual evidence to show that it was not their fault, to protect their drivers, then that's crucial, a place to stand in terms of defend your company. Many drivers have a resistance to the rearward-looking cameras. But I think the best example for having that I've seen is there was a rollover bus accident in California. The National Highway Traffic Safety Council started with the notion that it was the driver's fault, the company fault. The rearward-facing camera showed the driver did everything that he was supposed to do. And the forward-looking camera showed that it was an issue with the road signage, not the driver error. Absent that information, who knows what fate the driver or the company would have faced in that result. So technology, as long as it's maintained, used, and proceeding, has been a good thing. And I think going into the future will only help our industry even more.
Now, certain types of these systems record a lot of data. What do fleets and drivers need to do with that data following a crash?
Evan, it may sound basic, but number one, know what you got and know what's coming in. Because if you don't know all the capacities or capabilities of the product, you may not be using it to its potential and preserving it after the accident. Number two, have a plan. Identify in this, you know, we get overloaded with data, particularly off of the devices we have. What are the key indicators? What is it that you're going to look at and use to monitor and manage your fleet and your drivers? And then consistently do that, apply that to that data. Number three, after the accident happens, make sure you preserve that data. Make sure that it's available in terms of if it's requested in discovery. And it's a situation where you know what you have, you've managed by it, and you've preserved it after the accident.
Doug, I know one of the things you do when you're not defending people in trucking against lawsuits is you speak to trucking industry associations as well as at driver meetings with fleets. What are a couple of the things that these folks tell you that they're always surprised to hear?
One of the key things you can imagine, Evan, is that when I talk about at these meetings, don't take statements from your drivers. That's something that's unheard of for folks because it's the normal course. But when you think about it, and I've got an article on our website that tells why you shouldn't do that, the statements themselves are of limited value, in fact, no value in terms of litigation. We have prepared and presented the story or information to the other side that we'll have to turn over in discovery without any reciprocation. And if the driver is facing criminal charges, we run the risk of having made them waive their Fifth Amendment rights on that. Another thing that we look at and the companies are often surprised by is the possibility, in fact, in many cases, the wisdom of suing the other side first. If there's a debate on liability, we have arguable fault on the other side, and we've suffered damage to our truck or the cargo, what we want to do is sue them. That does two things. Number one, if we are in a more conservative jurisdiction, it establishes jurisdiction in that location and thus keeps us from being sued in a less conservative, more plaintiff-friendly venue. Second thing is it gives us the jump on discovery. We have subpoena power. We can begin discovery against the insurance carrier for the automobile where the other side who has not sued us yet sits in those locations and does not have that ability.
Speaking of lawsuits, it seems these days, anytime I turn on local television stations, I see a barrage of ads from attorneys looking to represent people hurt in truck crashes. Plus, there are billboards for these attorneys seemingly all over the country. Is it just me, Doug, or has there been a more aggressive effort over the past 10 to 20 years to file lawsuits against truck drivers and fleets involved in crashes with four-wheelers?
Evan, I've been specially admitted in 35 states to deal with cases, and that has become a nationwide situation. You know, for too many people out there, there is the mentality of hit a truck, get a check. they look at our drivers and our company's units as 18-wheel ATM machines. A lot of this, I think, has been driven by the contraction, the protection that the medical malpractice, the doctors have come up with. And the plaintiff attorneys who used to have a profit center of suing doctors, the laws that limit the ability to do so have driven them or pushed them to look for new resources. Well, they've turned to trucking. They feel there's a public perception as to the trucks and the truck drivers themselves. Plus, they know there's a guaranteed required insurance pool out there. So that whole thing has moved over where there is a market now of plaintiff attorneys who seek to profit off of those of us who bring the goods and services that America needs to keep it running every day.
We've been talking a lot about crashes involving people, but let's look at those that involve property, such as a truck hitting a building, running into a parked vehicle, or some other incident or crash in which no people were directly involved. My question is, Doug, should the response by truck drivers and fleets to these incidents be any different than they are with crashes when people are involved?
Not at all. In fact, you should be treating them the same. Take photographs, look for witnesses, get the documentation. Where these things go, be it a building where someone, we do a dent on it and they want to get a whole new side. Same thing with a car. And in fact, Evan, let's take it a step further. Not just these non-personal injury accidents, but roadside inspections. It's important to do the documentation, take your photographs so that you have it for your data queue, something to support it. The documentary evidence with regard to, be it non-personal injury cases, to roadside inspections, to anything else where there could be a question, is vital. I had just finished a case in New Jersey where the claim was that the wheel came off of our truck and hit a car. Well, our response was it was a blown tire. A gator hit the car, not the wheel. Unfortunately, number one, that our driver did not take photographs, that the rim was still on, that it was just a blown tire. And number two, that driver regrettably passed away between the time of the accident and when litigation started. The photographs, the immediacy are vital. You know, you talked about going around seeing the billboards, and we bemoan our situation on that. But we have an advantage that none of those folks have. We know about that accident, any accident, before they do. We have the key, the vital benefit and advantage of immediacy. And if we don't take action immediately, if we don't capitalize on an advantage, then we have squandered our greatest asset.
Doug, you've given some very helpful information to both fleets and drivers. Any final thoughts?
For trucking companies, for drivers, prepare now. Teach your drivers. Train them what to do. Get an accident response plan. You know, Evan, I think of it this way. You're a football coach. There's seconds remaining. You have the ball on the other team's 3-yard line. You need to score a touchdown to win. That's not the time you're going to start to draw up a play, decide who's going to run the play, and then try to figure out where you're going to find them on the bench to get them in the game. It's 3 a.m. and the phone rings. That's not the time for you to start to draft your accident response plan, decide who's going to implement it for you, and then try to find those people in the middle of the night. Plan now. Prepare. Be ready to act immediately. And take advantage of our greatest asset.
Doug Marcello is a trucking defense attorney based in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, with the firm Marcello & Cavisto. You can find him online at cdl-law.com. That's cdl-law.com, where you can also find those accident report forms he mentioned a bit earlier. Doug, thanks very much for being here.
Evan, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And you can find more information on truck safety on the PrePass website by visiting our blog as well as the resource library at prepass.com. You can keep up with PrePass online by logging on to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can hear previous editions of this podcast or subscribe to it through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Android, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and more. You've been listening to Eyes on the Road, presented by PrePass, the provider of waystation bypass and toll payment services. PrePass also provides informed visualization software for improving safety scores and lowering toll-related costs. I'm Evan Lockridge. Thank you for listening, and remember to keep your eyes on the road.